The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is head priest at the monastery and the abbess of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Upaya. Skillful means. Forms that the teachings take, reflecting their appropriateness to the circumstances in which they appear. It's from the A. Gates Glossary. Upaya, skillful means. Forms that the teachings take, reflecting their appropriateness to the circumstances in which they appear. I was thinking about upaya this week, skillful means, how we discover what is skillful and what is unskillful in moving our awakened nature into beneficial action. How are we a beneficial creation out of this uncreated moment to moment? So our Ango theme is the mountain training, the eight gates of Zen. So I feel like I've been meeting Daido Roshi a lot this Ango and studying the eight gates and listening to his talks. And rereading his books and how the teacher keeps teaching even though their form has changed. Still, his skillful means are very active. And if we understand skillful means as the teachings, skillful means for what? Well, in the Buddha Dharma, it's for liberating the clinging mind from suffering. And the eight gates of Zen is entering the skillful means of Daido Roshi's expression. He would say there's actually no gates. No gates, just one body, one mind, one life, one heart, one realization. But we look into these areas of focus to develop our skills, arousing and protecting bodhicitta, to see where we turn away and can turn towards, not making harm, practicing good, cultivating good for others, strengthening our aspiration to be of benefit to self, to ourself, to others. Liberating the clinging mind. And don't we see it in all the skillful means offered? I mean, just how many of you ring a bell? Where do you find yourself? Being a server, an usher, what arises as you're doing your service position? In one of our students wrote a book about the Greek language, and she began with this word, gnosko, which means to come to know, the recognition of what is true by experience. I was reading this book on contemporary artists who practice the Buddha Dharma, and I really enjoyed this essay by Robert Thurman. So he takes us back to the time of the Buddha, where he started to realize this need for skillful means. Say you are a Buddha, and you're free of suffering, and you feel totally great, as happy as a bee, happy as a clam, at one with the universe. And then you see all these miserable people. What good would it do for you to go and give them a big grin and a hug or smother them with joyfulness? They'll just get freaked out and paranoid and say, what does that person want? So instead, a Buddha has to develop some strategies, some art, to first of all open that person's imagination to the fact that there is a world where they don't have to be miserable all the time. And then they have to help them with a method of how to move from their paranoid corner of misery into the great ocean of bliss of the universe that you, a Buddha, perceive. Now, as you know, the Buddha began then, so he says, in a sense, none of what Buddha expressed was driven by any sort of selfish impulse on the part of the being that was formerly Siddhartha Gautama. Everything he does is a communication of compassion to other beings, creating doorways to open up their imaginations and their whole beings to enlightenment, to nirvana, to peace. So to first present nirvana first as a work of art allows people to perceive it and opens up the possibility that they can experience it for themselves. Who would want to seek nirvana or peace if they couldn't imagine there was such a state of freedom from suffering? So the Buddha's first talk was on the Prajnaparamita. And if you remember, it was written in the Lotus Sutra that he talked about the emptiness of everything, the no-thingness, and 5,000 monks, nuns, and lay people left. One scholar called it the Heart Attack Sutra. Some people even had heart attacks because they couldn't bear to have it be so laid bare that nothing was fixed or permanent in such a way. And Shariputra saw everyone leaving and said to the Buddha, what should we do? How should we get everybody back here? And Buddha said, let them go. Let them go. And then he looked again and he said, let me start with the Four Noble Truths. Hey, everybody, life suffers. Boom. We're all there. And that suffering is from dukkha, from thirst, from dissatisfaction, from not having what we want or having something and we want to get rid of it, just spinning in that. And then he said, the good news is we can put an end to that suffering. And he laid out the Eightfold Path, or of right views or perfect views, right determination, right speech, right ethics, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. In the Avatamsaka Sutra, it says, mind is like an artist able to paint the worlds. The five clusters are all born thence. There's nothing it doesn't make. As is the mind, so is the Buddha. So is the Buddha. As is the Buddha, so are living beings. Know that Buddha and mind are in essence inexhaustible. If people know the actions of mind creates all worlds, they will see the Buddha and understand the Buddha's true nature. So we know of all the many unskillful, unexamined desires, strong attachments and tendencies, we're starting to know or become familiar in ourselves that cause trouble, stress, create harm for ourselves, for others. And we definitely need to learn skills guiding our alertness and our goodwill. And this is why all of the Buddhist teachings are considered to be skillful means, because they're part of our refuge, as I spoke of before, to protect ourselves from our own lack of skill. How generous. How generous. He could have just gone off happy as a clam. Daido, as we, you know, continue on our bodhisattva path to Buddhahood, Daido cautioned us against believing that we have all the answers, that we know what is actually skillful for someone else. Even as we're learning what's skillful for us. He railed against arrogance, making someone disempowered in the name of skillful means. And we know Buddhist communities continue to grapple with leaders considered to be enlightened using skillful means and taking advantage of their power dynamic. That's been there throughout history. And we can be grateful to the Buddha and the ancestors for sharing with us what they worked through and taught. You don't have to starve yourself and be an ascetic to realize your true nature. The Buddha said, don't do that. You don't have to do that. You can nourish. You need this body. It's your vehicle. Bankai says, you don't have to push so hard to make yourself sick. And then keep going and make yourself sicker. Don't let your Zen sickness be interfering. Rengetsu showed us it was skillful to have a moving meditation when deeply grief-stricken. That the skillful way is to be absolutely, irredeemably heartbroken and not try and hold it together. She said, we can do that. It's exhausting, and everyone can feel it. So we're not doing anyone a favor. She skillfully showed how to know that grief moves and not to solidify in stories about it. So skillful means, does it take something to make it skillful? Is it art practice, body practice, liturgy, face-to-face teaching, is that skillful means in and of itself? Or does it need us, our energy, our wisdom, our power to ignite it, to make it skillful? So we have a schedule. We get up at 3:50. Is that skillful for you? You knew that before you came here. You weren't straitjacketed into Sesshin. So why fight it? You wanted this on some level. You knew. It wasn't going to change. So what do you sit there? Why do we have to get up at 3:50? It's like ridiculous. So what does it take to make it skillful? Why is it happening? Why did you choose it? There's many things like that. We can go on and on. Daido always used to say that, you know, don't have this attitude like you, just because you take your seat of Zazen, You don't just throw, you know, sit there and lower your eyes and say, okay, do me. Anything happening yet? He said, forget about it. In order for it to function, it needs to be discovered, engaged, applied, tested, and developed. And this is not just once. We're constantly having to work this like a piece of clay, molding it into a form. What's skillful? What do we keep? What's not helpful? When the mind is free of attachment and delusion, its actions are effortlessly creative, perfectly tuned to the moment, just like the universe itself. I was thinking of Shugan Roshi spoke about Ubiri and how the Buddha, after she had this grief, and Buddha opened her up, you know, come to your senses. I was thinking of Patakara and the skill that the Buddha used with her. And there are lots of stories, and throughout the literature, we all know this. It's all skillful means. Every koan is skillful means getting us to realize. So Patakara was, her story was, she was a mother, had a child, and she was going to have a second child, and the custom is to go to your parents' house. So she was on the way to the home, and a storm came up, and she was very close to giving birth. In fact, it was time. Along with the storm, her water broke. So her husband went to get some branches to build a shelter, and he was bitten by a poisonous snake and died. But she didn't know it because she crawled into a hollow tree and gave birth. It was only the next day that she searched for him and found him and saw that he had died. So she decided to continue on to her parents' house. But she had to cross this river that was overflowing. And so she was going to take one child at a time to cross. So she took her newborn infant across and laid it in the bushes. And then she went to get the next child on the other shore when she saw a hawk come and pick up her child and carry it off. And as she screamed, the other child thought that was the cue to come and stepped into the water and was taken away. So that's a husband and two children within a few days. And she continued on to her parents' house and met someone on the way from that village. And they said, in that storm last night, there was a fire. And I'm sorry, your whole family was taken in that fire. Needless to say, can you imagine her state of mind? And she just kept wandering after that, just not even taking care of herself, just wandering. Unbeknownst to her, she came upon the Jeddah Grove where the Buddha was teaching. And his disciples found her very frightening and appalling. A pariah. And the Buddha saw her, and they said, let her be. And he rose and he followed and he placed himself in her path. And when they met, he said, sister, it is time to recover your presence of mind. Come to your senses. At that moment, it was like an electric shock for her. She was ready. And she came to her senses and she realized she had nothing on. She took a cloak and covered her body and she asked the Buddha to help her. Well, it's easy to say that maybe the Buddha did something, gave her something. Perhaps she heard not simply the words of Shakyamuni Buddha, but she'd heard that timeless Buddha voice, which calls to each of us to wake up, to recover our presence of mind. What happens when we recognize no one can help us to come home? We have all the means because we've never left. When we unreservedly trust into the truth of that boundless mind itself, I would say she emptied herself of her games, her illusions so completely she could hear it. It was done. She was cleaned out. She found trust beyond any knowing and measure, direct to the heart. Patakara was freed. And then after listening to her tragic story, Buddha told her, throughout many lives, she had shed more tears for the loss of loved ones than there was water in the oceans. I feel like that was a real critical part of the story, that he said that. That was so skillful to be that she was recognized, that she was met in her suffering. The Buddha reminded her, at your death, even if they had all been living, your family could only look on in helpless despair. Only the Dharma can help you. And hearing this, she decided to ordain and was taken into the nuns' community, which welcomed her, and she became a teacher. And she used what she had been through as her skillful means in her teachings. Recognition of what is true by experience, as is this Vusatsu. A renewal of our vows, primarily to have the opportunity to atone, be at one, be not separate from our harmful karma, our intentional actions, separation we have created since from beginningless beginning, and to recommit to be guided by the precepts. So this ceremony too goes back to the time of the Buddha. How generous we can atone for our harmful actions. And Buddha created this ceremony. What a way to spend a Friday night. All harmful karma ever created by me since of old, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, now I'm at one with it all. Mizumi Roshi says, he talks about ceremonial action, and he said the Latin word for ceremony is karamonia, which translates, which is related to cura, meaning cure. The act of healing or being healed. In other words, he says, ceremony is an act that cures or heals, or by which something is healed. And then he throws in his little, we must ask, what is healed? By what? As I was working on this, I was thinking of Dido's skillful means of how we can connect with Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, Namu, being one with Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. And he initiated an art practice to connect with Avalokiteshvara, what each of us had to study, what are the qualities of that Bodhisattva, and find them within ourselves, and then create something. And then he had us do this creative audience one day. So we got in groups of five. He loved to do this creative audience. And somebody brought this little sculpture they did. And so we all did the process. He took us through relaxing every muscle from the head to down to the toe. Just becoming aware of each part of your body and relaxing it, and then taking a flash look, closing your eyes and seeing what the after image was like, and then going into the art a little bit more. And so we were all doing this sculpture, and then we give our responses, and some people are saying, like, I started to get a headache, and my throat was really tight. And then the next person saying, I felt like I was being pressed and I couldn't move and I felt heat in my cheeks. And like everyone in the circle was sort of, and the person that made it was visibly getting quite angry. This is their Avalokiteshvara. And we're all saying, I feel tight. I feel like I'm choking. I can't move. And so he finally stands up and he says, you people are nuts. And he tears out of there. And so we start processing, you know, what happened? Like, you know, we're like, we were just doing it. Like, it wasn't about him. We were just like, and then a few minutes he returned and he says, you know what? He says, I was working on that up in the cabin and there was no heat. And it was 7 o'clock in the morning. And all I did while I worked was curse the monastery, curse art practice, wonder why I'm here as I'm sculpting this. That's what we got. That's what we got. And Dido used to say, we're always creating something. The question is, what? How aware are we of our actions and what we are expressing? He also shared one time he got in a big fight in his company because they were, he was in a chemical company and they were pouring stuff out into the river, and he got in a big fight with everyone in the office and he stormed out. And he was coming home and he had his camera as usual, and he saw some graffiti on these rocks. So he parked the car and he's fuming. He said he's driving along and he's just going over the whole thing and he's, you know, angry with everyone and going over the whole situation. And then he starts photographing this graffiti on the rocks, and he realizes he's lightening up and he's getting a little lighter. And he felt pretty pleased with himself and how the day ended, and developed these images and had them on slides. And he said he had a date that night. And he thought, that's what I'll do. I'll make dinner and I'll show these pictures I created. And so he does that, and as they're sitting there, he looks over at her and there's tears running down her face. And so it finishes and she says, that was horrible. That was really painful. And he thought this was the best thing he did, you know. And he realized, he said that was the first time he realized, as he says, an unexamined mind is a dangerous one. That he didn't know. He was working out what happened at the office, and that's what she was getting. So we need to take care of our creations. Shugen Roshi gave a talk, and I heard this thing he said, don't put the handle of creation in someone else's hands. Create good karmic roots. Karma simply means intentional action. Simply. There's a lot on karma. This relationship between what we choose to do and then what we make of ourselves, how we shape ourselves, and how we're shaped by ourselves through actions, moment to moment, by intention, born of your body, mouth, and thought. It's very direct. We can't look around. It says, born of my, nobody else's creation. When Buddha was teaching his son Rahula, he said, this is like, can you imagine your dad sitting you down and saying this? I was trying to imagine that. Look at your actions. Before you act, look at your intentions. If you think that what you're going to do or say or think is harmful, unskillful, you've got to tell yourself, no, don't do that. If you don't foresee any harm, then you can do it. If while you're doing it, you see that some harm is happening that you didn't anticipate, you stop. Otherwise, you keep on doing it. Then when you're done, you reflect on the long-term consequences of your actions. If you see that there was any unforeseen harm, then you resolve not to repeat it, not to repeat that mistake again. If you don't see that there was any harm, then you can take joy in the fact that you're training the mind well and you haven't harmed anybody at all. So what qualities do we personally need to be developing? What qualities need to be abandoned? This is part of what the Buddha called the customs of the noble ones. That we learn how to delight, he said, in abandoning whatever we have to abandon, and to delight, interesting he uses that word, to delight in developing whatever needs to be developed. Can we delight in abandoning what we need to abandon? And delight in developing what we need to develop? We take delight in development, in wisdom, and we support each other in such a way. This is said to be how we purify our actions and where we have to begin. And I'll close with Daito Roshi's words. So please, when you practice, practice skillfully. Practice your life. Trust yourself completely. Trust the process of sitting. Know that deep within each and every one of us, under layers of conditioning, there is an enlightened being alive and well. In order to function, it needs to be discovered. To discover this, Buddha is wisdom. To make it function in the world is compassion. That wisdom and compassion is the life of each one of us. It's up to you what you do with it.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.